Welcome to our deep dive, everyone. Today, we're heading to Farndale, a hidden valley in the North York Moors of Yorkshire.
Beautiful area.
Yeah, and we're going way back, medieval times. Our guide is this incredible book, Farndale to 1500.
Compiled by, you know, actual Farndale descendants, really dug deep into their family history.
And what they found is amazing. Farndale was this dense, wild forest, like a hidden world. But it changed so much.
Right. By the late Middle Ages, it's a whole community thriving. That's what's so fascinating, that transformation.
So, okay, imagine this. You're in this valley, right? Surrounded by trees. But under your feet, centuries of history.
Layers and layers of it.
Exactly. And our mission, well, it's to uncover that history. How did Farndale go from wild beasts, that's how one monk described it, to a place where people built lives, you know, families?
And it's even older than that. I mean, we're talking about people living there 20,000 years ago.
20,000, seriously? That's like the Stone Age, right?
Neolithic, to be precise. And we know they were there because they left tools behind, flint tools, up on the high ground surrounding the valley.
So they weren't just passing through. These were settlements.
It looks like it. And these weren't just any old tools. They used some pretty advanced techniques.
Like what?
The Levallois technique, for one. This involved shaping a flint core to get specific flakes. It required real skill and planning.
Wow, I wouldn't have guessed that for 20,000 years ago. That's incredible. So they were smart, these early Farndale folks. But why live up high? Wouldn't the valley be easier?
Well, remember, back then it was dense forest. The higher ground probably offered better protection, visibility.
Like a lookout point. Keep an eye out for those wild beasts. Makes sense. But did any other civilizations, you know, like the Romans, did they ever settle in Farndale?
Not really. There's a record of a Roman coin purse found up above the valley.
A lost purse.
Yeah, maybe dropped by a patrol passing through, but no sign of permanent settlements.
Huh. Even the Romans, huh? So Farndale stayed this hidden wilderness for centuries until when did things start changing? When did people really move in?
We have to fast forward a bit to the 12th century, 1154 to be exact. That's when Farndale gets mentioned by name in a land grant.
A land grant? To whom?
Ravaux Abbey, a powerful Cistercian monastery. Imagine these massive stone buildings, soaring arches. They were major players, especially in the wool trade.
Ah, so they needed land for sheep. Makes sense. So these monks, they had their eyes on Farndale's potential, even if it was still pretty wild. But were they the only ones there? I remember reading something about a hermit.
Oh, yes, Edmund. He lived in a cave at Middlehead, said to be a descendant of King Alfred the Great, no less.
A hermit with royal blood. Now that's a story. But these monks, they weren't content with just sheep, right? How did they actually make Farndale livable for a larger community?
Well, that's where another group comes in, the Stutevilles, a powerful noble family. Around 1230, they start bringing in tenant farmers. Villeins, they were called. Their job. Clear the land, make it suitable for agriculture.
Ah, so it's the Stutevilles who really kickstart this transformation. But these Villeins, they weren't exactly doing it out of the goodness of their hearts, were they?
No, not really. It was a system of obligation. They worked the land for the Stutevilles in exchange for, well, the right to survive, essentially.
So not a great deal for those farmers, but they were the pioneers, the ones who really started to tame Farndale's wilderness.
Exactly. And in the next part, we'll see just how much they achieved. Get ready for some amazing discoveries.
Can't wait. Join us for part two, folks, where we'll delve even deeper into Farndale's history. Back to Farndale we go. Last time, we left those tenant farmers, the Villeins, arriving in this valley. Can you imagine? 13th century, dense forest all around. Must have been daunting, to say the least.
Daunting. I'd say more like terrifying. And remember, these weren't volunteers. They were bound to the land, working for the Stutevilles.
Yeah, we talked about that. Not exactly a fair system, but still, they were the ones transforming the landscape, right? Turning wild forest into, well, farmland.
And they were making progress, too. Faster than you might think. We have this record from 1276, an Inquisition post-mortem.
Inquisition? Sounds ominous.
Well, it's basically a property survey done after someone dies. And this one shows that Farndale's tenant farmers, they were already paying substantial rent, which means they'd cleared a lot of land.
Okay, so how much land are we talking about? Give us the numbers.
Ready for this? Based on the rent records, they were cultivating something like 545 acres.
545 acres? That's what, like over 200 hectares? From forest to farmland in just a few decades? That's incredible. Yeah. And did it keep growing?
Oh, yeah. Another Inquisition, 1282, just 6 years later, rents are even higher. Now it's 768 acres, and the population, 90 villains.
Wow. So despite the hardships, they were really building something. A whole community. It's amazing how these records bring it all to life, you know?
Absolutely. It's not just numbers on a page, it's people's lives. Speaking of which, remember those water mills we mentioned?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, a 1301 tax record gives us a glimpse of one of the millers, Simon the Miller.
Simon the Miller. Sounds like a character straight out of, I don't know, a Chaucer tale or something.
Yeah.
Was he doing all right for himself?
Seems so. His tax payment suggests he was quite well off. Probably had wealth equivalent to, six horses or 12 cows.
That's pretty impressive for a miller. Must have been a respected figure in the community. Can you picture it? The watermill, the sound of the grindstones.
Essential part of life back then. Everyone needed flour. And this tax record, it doesn't just tell us about Simon, it shows us the whole community, a range of wealth.
So some folks were doing better than others.
Definitely. We see everything from, well, folks like Simon to people paying just a few pennies in taxes, barely scraping by.
Makes you think about the different lives, different experiences, even within this small community. But it wasn't all peaceful progress, was it? There's that other record about fines.
Ah, yes. The court document, 1334, it names all these Farndale residents fined for, well, letting their animals stray.
Stray? Into what? Their neighbors' fields?
Not exactly. Into the royal forest.
The royal forest. Oh, right. The king's hunting grounds. Off limits.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Strict laws about those. Even accidentally letting your animals wander in could mean trouble.
So these Farndale folks, they were pushing the boundaries a bit. Or maybe just desperate for grazing land.
Who knows? But the record names them all. Robert the Smith, John the Shepherd, even a groom named Roger, all in trouble.
Makes you wonder what their lives were like, you know? The daily struggles. And remember the Stuteville's, those powerful lords, their hold on Farndale, well, didn't last forever.
Right, their line ends and Farndale becomes part of someone else's vast holdings. Someone quite extraordinary, actually. Joan Plantagenet.
Joan Plantagenet, yeah. The Fair Maid of Kent. That's royalty, right?
Granddaughter of King Edward III, and her life, full of intrigue, secret marriages, royal power struggles, even connections to, get this, the founding legend of the Order of the Garter.
Wow, the Order of the Garter. She sounds like, I don't know, a medieval superstar. Did she ever actually visit Farndale?
Probably not. But her influence would have been felt. It's fascinating how her life, all this wealth and power, is connected to those Farndale farmers, you know?
Totally. History's full of those unexpected links.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the community itself? How did Farndale cope with, well, everything that was happening? The Black Death, for one.
Yeah, right. 1349, it swept through England, killed Joan Plantagenet, too. But even then, life in Farndale, it went on. People adapted.
They had to. What else could they do?
And there's evidence they were doing more than just surviving. Records from the mid-14th century mention a yearly fair, a weekly market.
A market. So it was becoming a real center of activity, despite everything. It speaks to their resilience, don't you think?
Absolutely. And it wasn't just commerce. There's evidence of a chapel in the valley, too. Late 1300s.
So a place of worship, a market, a community pulling together. It's quite a journey from that wild, untamed place to, well, this.
And there's even a mention of a possible friary on Blakey Howe overlooking the valley. House of the Brethren of Holy Charity, it's called.
Wow. Monks, a hermit, now friars. It seems Farndale was attracting a lot of spiritual types.
You could say that. But in the next part, we'll see how Farndale continues to evolve. It's a story that just keeps unfolding.
I can't wait to hear it. Join us for the final part of our Farndale adventure, folks. We're back in Farndale. It's amazing to think how far we've come, you know? From those prehistoric traces to a bustling medieval community. But history doesn't just stop there, right? What happens next? What about, you know, after the Middle Ages?
Right. So what happens to Farndale as England, as it moves into like the post-medieval period? Does it keep up with the changes? It's a really interesting question because, well, a lot of people think progress, you know, it all happened in cities. But Farndale, it tells a different story.
Okay, I'm listening. Tell me more. What's happening in Farndale as, you know, things are changing all across England?
Well, let's not forget about the wool trade. Remember how Farndale was becoming a big wool producer? Well, by the 15th, 16th centuries, that industry, it's booming. Records show Farndale wool being sold all over Yorkshire. Merchants, you know, they travel around gathering sacks from all these different places.
So Farndale was connected to this massive economic network. But were the farmers themselves getting rich? Or were the profits going to, you know, the landlords?
That's the key question. And it gets to the heart of, like, all the social changes happening in England. Remember the Peasants' Revolt back in 1381?
Oh, wasn't that a pretty big deal?
Huge. It showed how much unrest there was. You know, people who felt tied to the land, they wanted more control over their lives.
Right. And even though the revolt itself didn't succeed, it did have a lasting impact, right?
Exactly. Things started to shift, slowly but surely. And even in a remote valley like Farndale, those larger forces, they're at play.
So did those Farndale farmers, were they able to gain more independence, more control over, you know, their own land?
It seems like it. And here's the fascinating part. While a lot of towns were struggling economically, a survey from 1570, it describes Farndale as having many wealthy and substantial men.
Wealthy farmers. That's not the image we usually get of rural life back then. What was their secret?
Well, think about it. Farndale had fertile land, access to the wool trade. It might have actually been a better place to be than some of those overcrowded cities. But this survey, it also mentions that Farndale provided a good number of soldiers for musters.
Military musters. Those were like roll calls to make sure everyone was ready to, you know, defend the country.
Exactly. And the fact that Farndale could provide a decent number, it tells us a couple of things. First, the population was growing. And second, they were integrated into, you know, the broader political scene, not just this isolated valley anymore.
It's pretty incredible when you think about it, the whole journey. We started with these hints of prehistoric hunters, then those medieval farmers clearing the land. Mm. And now Farndale's this thriving, you know, connected community.
It's a real testament to their resilience, their adaptability. But ultimately, all this history, it's not just about Farndale, is it? It's about us.
You mean because those people, they were our ancestors?
Exactly. Those farmers, the millers, even those shepherds who, you know, maybe bent the rules a little. They're all part of the story that led to us.
It's a powerful thought, isn't it? All those lives, all those experiences shaping who we are today.
And for anyone who gets the chance to visit Farndale, you know, to walk those hills, to see those valleys, it must be incredible to imagine, to feel that connection.
Like stepping back in time. And who knows, maybe we'll do another deep dive into Farndale someday.
Yeah.
You know, explore its more recent history, see how they faced the Industrial Revolution, the World Wars, everything that came after.
There's always more to discover.
That's the beauty of history, isn't it? It's a never-ending story. But for now, we'll leave you with those connections to the past, those echoes of the people who lived and worked and loved in Farndale.
Their legacy lives on.
It certainly does. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey, folks. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep those connections to history alive.